This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePaul. This week, we take an in-depth look into our music library. We run off into the woods once again, but this time from a technical perspective. We talk about Songfest and other summer opportunities by our students and faculty. We strand one of our creative writing professors on a desert island with his 5-minute iPod. And we bring into the studio the Project Trio, fresh off of their incredible performance in the School of Music on Wednesday night. There are lots of exciting things happening in the School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. Students at DePaul have a remarkable array of opportunities during the school year, and for the past few episodes, we've been chatting with folks about the things they do beyond the school year. Joining us to chat about a remarkable opportunity in LA this summer are faculty member Carrie Jennings, welcome.
Thank you.
And student Alex Metzel, welcome.
Thanks.
So you guys were off in LA this summer as part of Songfest, correct?
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that. Dr. Jennings, what is this program exactly?
It is a 4-week-long program that focuses on art song. And even though there are lots of master classes and things on German song and on French song and Spanish and Scandinavian and all sorts of song, one of the main things is the focus on American song and the bringing in of composers in residence to work with the different students and faculty members that are there. It's something that I knew about as a student and always wanted to try to go to, never really worked into my schedule. And so I thought that since I've been teaching full-time for the better part of a decade now, that that ship had sailed. But this past summer, they started a program called the Mentor Program also. So teachers and coaches now have the opportunity to go and do the same thing that the young artists and professionals and interns are doing as well.
Right. And so how did you get into it, Alex?
Well, I had talked with my professor, Caroline Smith, about summer programs. And art song is one of my favorite things. I love opera, but art song is definitely my favorite. And so this is one of the best programs in the world, actually, for art song. And so I was in the Young Artist Program.
Did you apply for this?
I did apply, and I had to audition. I actually went to Cincinnati to audition for the head of the program.
And you were selected? Congratulations.
I was, yeah, and I actually got a scholarship, which was very nice.
Oh, very good. And so did you know that Dr. Jennings was doing this?
After we both had been accepted and were going, we found out we were both.
Yeah, I didn't find out until, I don't know, at least a month after I knew that I was going that Alex was also going.
So, So did you guys work together out there? Did you have the opportunity to see each other? Did you do similar things, or how did that work?
The program was only about 200 people at the biggest, so it was kind of hard not to run into everyone, and we were all at the Coburn School and spent most of our days in one of the recital halls listening to master classes and lectures and recitals, so you did see everybody all the time.
That's terrific. And so did you perform there?
I did. I performed 14 times.
14 times.
Yeah, I was in 11 master classes, 2 recitals, and then the final concert.
And how about you? Were you performing as well?
I sang a couple of times. The mentor program is more geared to make sure that we're sitting in on the master classes and kind of learning from these master teachers and composers, although we do have some opportunity to perform. So I sang on a Poulenc class and then also sang on a New American Composers class where I sang a piece by Laurie Lightman.
How about that?
Yeah.
So how long is this?
It's 4 weeks. The mentors have the option to go for one session or both. I was only able to go to one because I came back for the vocal arts camp, of course.
Right.
So I was there. But 2 weeks is, you can't imagine in 2 weeks really the things that are crammed into what seems like a short period of time.
Right.
It was a wonderful experience.
And were you there for all 4 weeks?
I was there for the whole time. I was actually also part of the office staff.
Ah.
So I got to do even more than just sing.
That's terrific. So you were involved in the management of it as well.
Yeah, and checking people in and helping take care of the composers and the masterclass teachers when they arrived.
Great. So who were some of the composers and masterclass teachers you worked with?
The composers this summer were Jake Hagee, Libby Larson, and John Musto. I sang for all of them. And then also in residence was William Bolcom and his wife, Joan Morris.
Wow. And so Libby Larson.
Yeah, it was great. One of the reasons that I also wanted to make sure that I applied this summer was that I knew that Libby was going to be there. And since Libby's going to be our composer in residence for the music of the 21st century, I thought, hey, why not? So I had the opportunity, obviously, to talk with her some more. I had met her for the first time about 6 years ago. But I got to sit in on master classes of the piece that I actually am recording of hers that I'm also performing for her when she was here. Uh-huh. So I was able to talk to her specifically about that piece.
Wow.
Which was a wonderful opportunity.
Wow, what a fantastic opportunity. Yeah. So was there a performance that really knocked you over or that you really thought was fantastic? Anything in particular that stood out above the others?
I think just the level of performance that was consistent throughout the month was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And how a lot of people, there was an opera concert or two, and that was great, but how everyone had taken a whole month of their life to devote to art song when they could be at Aspen or Tanglewood or Chautauqua.
What a great opportunity. And it's wonderful when students have this opportunity. It's wonderful when faculty have this opportunity. It's particularly great when you can do it together. And that was kind of a serendipitous thing. You both apply and are selected and then find out that you're both in it. So yes, we're glad that you could join us to chat about it. And we wish you good things as we bring Libby back for Music of the 21st Century.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Did I clearly say, children must listen?
No, no, please.
What were you not to do? Children must see and learn.
No.
Why could you not obey? Children should listen. What have I been to you? What would you have me be? Handsome like a prince. Ah, but I am old, I am ugly, I embarrass you.
No.
Yes, you are ashamed of me.
No.
You are ashamed. You don't understand.
It was lonely atop that tower.
And I was not company enough.
I am no longer a child. I wish to see the world.
Don't you know what's out there in the world? Someone has to shield you from the world. Stay with me. Princes wait there in the world, it's true. Princes, yes, but wolves and humans too. Stay at home, I am home. Who out there could love you more than I? What out there that I cannot supply? Stay with me. Stay with me, the world is dark and child, while you can be a child with me.
Both last semester and this semester, we have touched upon the upcoming production of Into the Woods that is coming up, the joint production of the School of Music and the Department of Theater. Last semester, we were able to talk to our director, Tim Good. A few weeks ago, we were able to talk to our music director, Stephen Linville, and one of our performers, Emily Barnash. But Into the Woods is an interesting show for a lot of reasons, and not the least of them is the technical demands of the show itself. So here to talk with me about our production of Into the Woods from the technical perspective is our technical director, Dwayne Skoog.
Hey.
Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
So is Into the Woods different than other shows that we do here at DePauw from your perspective?
There are a lot more, because it has a magical, fantastical quality about it. There are special effects that are in the show that sort of have to be there. Luckily, actually, a former student of mine from over at Indiana State University from 15, almost 20 years ago has a company that specializes in special effects, and he loves this show, so he has provided, given us a very, very sweet deal on some special effects equipment.
Yeah, because there's some interesting things that have to happen in that show. Does the witch levitate?
It depends on the production. But yeah, she kind of flies and levitates, but we really don't have the equipment to do that safely. But we do have a smoke effect where she transforms, and we have a special wand that Tom has provided for us. Tom
right.
Pitts was his name.
Right. There's a moment where the witch has to shoot fireballs basically out of her staff.
We have a strobe staff that does that.
Very pretty
effective.
And then at one point, and of course we're giving away a little bit inside track to the show, but if you're listening to Music for Life, you probably know a little bit about Into the Woods anyway. But the witch turns and changes from a witch right before your eyes.
Yeah, there's a large fog / smoke effect that we have that pumps out an extreme volume of smoke in a very short amount of time that will mask that particular transition.
Yeah, and that's a tough transition to make that happen.
Yeah, it's very fast.
Yeah, really goes by. And then there's a cow, Milky White.
Milky White, yes.
Milky White in this show. And Milky White is often done in a lot of interesting ways.
Right.
In some productions, Milky White is actually a plastic cow with a handle on his back, so you pick him up and carry him where you want to go. But the cow has to move. How are we pulling that off in our production?
In our production, Milky White is an actual person.
Oh. So a person's been cast as Milky White.
A person has been cast as Milky White. And the art department, a couple of students in the art department agreed to carve the head for Milky White, and then there is a framework that goes around the person's torso to bind or confine Milky White, according to the script. So Milky White, and then white, and the costume rendering is a white leotard, and I'm
right.
Because Milky White is not supposed to be very healthy.
Right, yes, right.
So
Milky White dies partway through.
So, so there's this, the framework is kind of an emaciated-looking rib thing.
Of the cow,
of
right.
Of the cow that
go.
The person all wears,
right.
So that it looks like a...
And then we have a tower, because
Rapunzel's tower, yeah.
Because what's really interesting about Into the Woods is that it's like all of these fairy tales,
right.
Five or six or eight or whatever it is, all rolled into the same
into
story.
One. Yeah.
And so for you as technical director, you have to be able to whip off Rapunzel, Snow White, the dwarves, everybody all at once.
Yeah, Rapunzel's tower during the intermission break turns into a wall for Humpty. We take off the top of Rapunzel's tower and roll it back on as Jack and Humpty's wall playing position for Lake Omicron.
Well, there's no shortage of special effects. And
Jack's beanstalk and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the beanstalk has to grow out of the stage.
The beanstalk comes out of the back of Jack's house. And
so this is some of the world's greatest lyrics, some of the world's greatest music, and also the magic of trying to tell all of these stories in a very short period of time on a single stage.
Right.
A lot to see, and it's coming up the last weekend in September, and you can grab tickets to it online or pick them up at our box office at any time. And thanks for coming in to talk with us about
it. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
It's the last midnight. It's the last wish. It's the last midnight. Soon it will be boom squish. Told a little lie, stole a little gold, broke a little vow. Did you? Had to get your prince, had to get your cow, had to get your wish. Doesn't matter how, anyway, it doesn't matter now. It's the last midnight. It's the boom splat. Nothing but a vast midnight. Everybody smashed flat. Nothing you can do. Not exactly true. You can always give her the boy. No. No, of course, what matters is the blame. Someone you can blame. Fine, if that's a thing you enjoy, placing the blame. If that's the aim, give me the blame. Just give me the boy.
No.
No. You're so pure, but stay here and in time you'll mature and grow up to be them, so let's fly, you and I, far away. I'm the hitch, I'm what no one believes, I'm the witch. They're all liars and thieves like your father, just like you will be too, oh why bother? They'll just do what they do. It's the last midnight. So goodbye, all. Coming at you fast. Midnight. Soon you'll see the sky fall. Jack, you want a bean? Have another bean. Beans were made for making you rich. Plant them and they'll soar. Here you want some more. Listen to the roar, giants by the score. Oh, you can blame another witch. It's the last midnight. It's the last verse. Now before it's past midnight, I'm leaving you my last curse. I'm leaving you alone, squirming in the mess that you made. Fix it on your own. Time for me to go, I'm afraid. Back to what I know, back to long ago. Safe inside the world that I'm from. Better ugly and spurned with my powers returned. And I fear midnight's here. Time to disappear. Mother, here I come.
This has been an exciting new twist this semester on Music for Life. Now the 5-minute iPod question is directed to faculty members in the College of Liberal Arts.
Oh no.
Yes, and joining me here to be stranded on a desert island is Professor Peter Graham. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have some expansion of the folks that we bring on board for this question. So, you're stuck on a desert island, you have an iPod, but it will only play for 5 minutes. Mm. So this is the 5 minutes of music that you get to hear until we send somebody else out to either rescue you or bring you a new iPod.
Right.
What would you put on your 5-minute iPod?
Well, maybe Monteverde.
There you go.
I picked up Monteverde's Vespers of the Virgin Mary, and I love this CD. I was turned on to it by my mother-in-law. Uh-huh. And
proof that you can get something good from your mother-in-law.
Yes. Exactly. Uh-huh. And it must have been, 15 years ago. And it's I use it as Christmas music, mm-hmm. because it's just such a beautiful...
This is some of the most beautiful ear-washing stuff you could possibly listen to.
It's amazing, and I love ear candy.
Yes, you know, right.
Ear candy is what I like. I'm no good with John Cage and things, you know, cacophony, dissonance, right. You know. I mean, it might be cool, it might be of the moment, but... I love beauty, and
this is definitely beautiful.
It's so great, and I don't know if I think the first part of this is 7 minutes, so I don't know if you get to.
We'll
get
let
to do
your
7 minutes.
Yeah, we'll extend your. What do you think, Matthew? Can we? Okay, we're going to give you. We're going to let you have a seven minute, the first ever seven minute iPod, but we're going to make this exception for you.
Fantastic.
Well, only because you've picked such a wonderful piece.
Last night I was furiously researching on the internet because. It's like, who is Monteverdi again? I knew who he was, and maybe many of you do as well. He was, one of the first. He was revolutionary, right?
Really was.
At the time.
Put in two camps.
I mean, he was, you know, part Renaissance, and mm-hmm. then he really introduced, really, the world, right? Right. To Baroque music. Right. I love Baroque music. Everybody, you know, is thinking, well, who do I like? What kind of music do I like? And, you know, Corelli and Vivaldi and Handel and
Definitely
Bach.
Definitely a Baroque
and,
guy you are.
You know, I just love that stuff. So yeah. I thought, oh, this would be perfect.
This is really perfect for this because, you know, it's funny. We've asked this question to a lot of folks, and sometimes it's... some pretty challenging music. And I think, boy, if I only had 5 minutes, I don't know how challenged I want to be. This is music that I'd be happy to listen to for 5 minutes or seven
right.
minutes in your specially dispensated case.
I got a couple more minutes.
You get a couple more minutes.
Yeah, it's in my mind because I listened to it this morning because I was like, okay, I better get into my... You know, dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. There you go.
It's got those magisterial, you know, horns at the beginning, sort of welcoming you into this. You know, you almost see these procession of, you know, kings and queens at the court or at a church, and they're all coming in, and then you get the strings coming in, and then, of course... Monteverdi was known as a choir master,
right? Exactly.
Right? So, and I was in the choir as a boy, so in the sixth and seventh and eighth grade.
Go.
So, and then you get those sopranos going, and the whole church is echoing, and you're lifted, right? Even if you're not a believer anymore.
So here you are seeing the power of a school of music at a liberal arts institution, and we are thrilled to welcome Professor Peter Graham from the College of Liberal Arts to come and share with us his 7 minutes of Monteverdi. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been an exciting day for us here in the DePauw School of Music because the Project Trio has arrived, and we've already had a performance for the School of Music at 10:30. We ran out to the middle school and performed at 1 o'clock, and then tonight at 7:30, the Project Trio will light us up again in Kresge Auditorium. And here to chat with us is the Project Trio, so we welcome here Peter, Greg, and Eric. Good to have you guys here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Welcome to DePauw.
All right.
Absolutely. We're having a blast.
You guys have been at this for a while together, right? This is 6, 7 years, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
How's life on the road for you guys? You doing all right?
Man, everything's going great. We're really busy. We're traveling all around the world. We're based in New York City. We love getting our sound out there. We love playing concerts. And one of our favorite things to do is all the outreach we get to with the students.
Well, you guys were great with those middle school kids today.
Thanks, man. That was a blast hanging with them. And you could see, you know, the excitement in their faces, you know, that we're up there playing these instruments, not only how they expected, but certainly how they weren't expecting.
Yeah.
With, you know, tons of passion and very strange sounds.
Right, yeah.
And it's a delight to share, and we're delighted to be able to do this full time. And
that Peter and the Wolf thing you guys did really lit everybody up. I mean, they do a great version of Peter and the Wolf that's really about a schoolyard bully, I guess. Now, I want to ask you this. You have millions of hits on YouTube. Were you expecting this kind of response to what you're up to?
You know, we weren't expecting any kind of popularity through the YouTube videos, but what we really wanted to do was to share our unique spin of music. And I think just from that alone, people are really interested. They want to see these classical instruments do more than they're supposed to do. They want to see people up on stage that sound like a bigger ensemble than
they
actually
are. And that are so passionate about what they're playing.
Absolutely. So I think the views on YouTube just are a reflection of that, that people are really into music, and especially music that is new and unique that you haven't ever heard before.
You guys walked into the Hub. We played a little surprise concert in the Hub, where we eat lunch here, the dining hall, basically. So 50 tickets right there on the spot. I mean, people respond to this kind of music and the way that you guys bring such passion and energy to it. How about you? You ever get weary from this? You guys have been up since 4 o'clock in the morning. You're off tonight, off to the next gig tomorrow.
Well,
how you doing?
You know what? That's the job. You know, I mean, I don't think we knew what to expect when we started being touring musicians, but we make it happen. And one thing as musicians today, you just got to be versatile. You got to be ready to go. You got to be ready to play anywhere you go and at any time. And I mean, I think that we're up for the challenge.
Yeah, and you know, that's what was so exciting about the chat this morning with the School of Music students, that you guys are just out there making it happen. It's like, we said we were going to do this. We're out there doing it. And you couldn't be more successful. I can't wait for your new album because I've played your old ones all to death. And we've been playing your YouTube videos in the School of Music for weeks on end. So we're really looking forward to your concert tonight. And thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
Hey, before I let you run off, why don't you play a little ditty here in the studio for us?
Sounds great.
All right. Thank you. Project Trio, live in Studio B. We've been chatting about the remarkable opportunities that students at DePauw take advantage of over the summers while they're away from the campus. And joining me to chat about their summer experiences are Martin DeFrance and Federico Poppi. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you guys have been doing some really interesting things over the summer. Martin, what were you up to?
I was living in Aspen, Colorado, working for a nonprofit music organization called Jazz Aspen Snowmass.
Mm.
And basically their mission is to present and preserve jazz music in the local area and to also help music education, which is something I know that we've been trying to do here.
Yes, indeed.
We get donations from a bunch of people and then siphon that into the music education program by hiring local musicians to teach students and also by like buying them instruments or repairing their instruments, getting them lessons.
Right, we've done something similar here. The School of Music has just adopted the music program at the Greencastle Middle School, and we're doing it much for the same reasons that you're talking about there.
Absolutely.
And Federico, what have you been up to?
Well, I went back to Italy this summer to my hometown in Spoleto, and I had an internship at Monini, which is an olive oil company, and they own Giancarlo Minotti's house in Spoleto, the founder of the Festival of the Two Worlds.
And so an olive oil company owns Minotti's home.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. And Giancarlo Minotti, famous opera composer we're talking about here, that brought Spoleto to the United States.
Exactly. And now the house is like an archive and a museum of the festival. One day I went to office and the owner of the company told me, knowing my musical background, she asked me if I could organize 2 weeks of concerts in Casa Minotti.
Really, just out of the blue. By the way, how about we throw a couple of weeks of concerts?
Exactly.
Wow.
And I had no budget, I had budget only to pay for copyright taxes and printing expenses.
Wow, talk about real world musical training right there. No budget, let's make it happen anyway.
Yeah, and I just brainstormed all the people I knew I had played with within like a 3-hour range from Spoleto. Asked them if they wanted to play, and it went well.
Wow. So for 2 weeks, you had performances?
Pretty much every day, yeah.
Oh, my God. In Minotti's home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. What performances did you see there?
We put on two festivals, one in June and then one on Labor Day that I didn't get to attend because I was here, obviously. Uh-huh. But the June festival, we had the Dukes of September, which was Boz Scaggs, Michael McDonald, and Donald Fagen of Steely Dan. Then the second night was Joe Cocker, and I actually got to meet Joe, which was pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
And then the last night I got to meet Chris Bodie, which
was fantastic
because trumpet is my instrument.
Right.
So
Chris is quite an amazing performer in his own right. Toured with Sting for a while. What's he up to these days? Doing his solo act?
Yeah, he plays 300 shows a year.
Wow.
Sells out venues every night and is playing with some of the best musicians in the world.
Wow. Yeah. And so how long were you there?
I was there all summer.
All summer. And they gave you a lot of time on your horn. And you also spent a lot of time studying this summer with...
I did with Thomas Hooton, who's the principal player of the Los Angeles Symphony Orchestra.
So how did that come about?
As I mentioned earlier, there's the Aspen Music School. And they have the best student musicians that are training to be professionals.
Mm-hmm.
They go there each year and they hire the best staff. And I sort of slipped in because
That's
I was living
terrific.
There and just gave him a call.
So was he there all summer?
No, he was only there for a month. Mm. I got three lessons. It's hard to afford any more than that. Yeah.
That is true. But boy, those are life-changing events. When you get a chance to sit next to someone of that caliber who has the experiences that he has, that did that completely revamp your thinking about your instrument?
Oh, absolutely. He especially helped me work on my like practice dynamics and how I focus my attention and how I utilize my time, like a lot of time management, so I'm not like killing my chops
all
day.
Right, yeah, it's tough for brass players because practice is important, but there's only so long before you've just turned into hamburger and you can't play anymore, so
you've
got to do it wisely.
Blown through a garbage can.
Yeah, exactly right. So Federico, you were performing in some of these.
In a couple of these events I did, but it was mostly people I had played with before. Mm-hmm. Actually, a couple of American performers played there. Terry Rhodes, mm-hmm. she's a soprano, and she's the dean of the School of Music at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. I had met her some years ago, so she was just there in Spoleto and asked her if she wanted to perform.
Isn't that terrific?
And she was very pleased to do so.
And this was the summer of your freshman year. You had just completed your first year here at DePaul, correct? Mm-hmm. And there's also, didn't you play for Yo-Yo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was so a
Federico,
year ago.
Yeah, right. Federico joins us from Italy and as a freshman auditions for the opportunity to be in the master class with Yo-Yo Ma. And you'd been on campus for like 4 weeks or something, and suddenly here's Yo-Yo Ma standing in front of you, and you're playing in front of 100 people for your lesson publicly. That wasn't nerve-wracking at all, was it?
No, not at all. No pressure. Not at all.
Well, you know, you guys both have taken advantage of opportunities to really sit at the feet of the masters and to find the best way forward on your own instrument, and you've had these worldwide opportunities, and you show what DePaul students are capable of, and I'm glad you took a moment to come in and chat with us about it.
Excellent.
Thank you.
A visit to the Green Center for the Performing Arts yields a lot of surprises. People are often impressed by our 1,400-seat concert hall and the various performing venues that we have, and to have a full-fledged recording studio right in the center of the building. But one of the most impressive elements of the Green Center for the Performing Arts is that we have our own music library, a two-story music library built into the building. And so our musicians have immediate access to the stacks and scores available in the very same building. And here to chat with me about this is our music and performance librarian and the coordinator of our music library, Misty Shaw. Welcome.
Hello. It's great to be here.
I'm glad you're back. We had you on for a five-minute iPod last season, and now we're actually going to get down into the nuts and bolts of the music library. So first, tell us a little bit about the library itself, its holdings.
Our first floor contains all of our periodicals. We have at least 100 periodicals, and our first floor has our 15,000 sound recordings,
15,000,
at least 500 DVDs, and 2,500 LPs. Those are vinyl records for students.
For those who don't remember what those things do, right?
And then downstairs are our stacks. The heart of the library is what I call it. We have at least 7,200 books about all aspects of music and the study of music, as well as about 12,000 scores, which is the printed music, including parts for small ensembles.
Wow, and it's an impressive collection. I mean, you could spend months there and never even dent it.
I wouldn't kick them out, no.
And so what kinds of things do you find yourself doing on a daily basis? Because you really serve a wide variety of constituencies.
I do, and it runs the gamut. I do a lot of collection development, so buying the scores and sound recordings that the faculty and the students need. Here at DePaul, I think we do a pretty good job of helping the students realize that the collection is for them. It's their collection, and so if our collection isn't meeting their needs, I want to hear about it. And I'm also giving personal and classroom instruction to our students so that they can learn how to use our resources to find what they need for their research and just for performing in their lessons.
Yeah, and they start that even as freshmen.
That's correct.
Through the first year seminar,
they
correct?
Get me several times in the first year seminar, and then there are music history years when it's really heavy and they're doing some serious graduate level research.
And we should also note that this is just one of the libraries on campus.
Mm-hmm.
This one just happens to be the one most used and perhaps most important to us as musicians, but there's also the Royal West Library, and there's other libraries pocketed throughout the campus.
Yeah, right across the street, we've got the Prevost Science Library with its own science librarian, and they've got a fabulous two-floor library as well.
And how long have you been here, Misty?
I am beginning my sixth year. I joined in summer 2007.
So there are a lot of things that we would expect that we would find in a music library, but then there's also some things that you might be surprised to find.
Yeah, we've got a giant larynx model that you can check out that we purchased for voice students.
That you can check out, yes. Okay.
It's got removable parts along with a list of 56 items you can view on the larynx so that you can learn all about your vocal cords and the part of your body that's helping you produce a sound when you sing. We've got a really cool sound recording called One Bit Music by composer Tristan Perrick, where instead of a compact disc, The CD, the jewel case, is its own playback device. And you've got to see it. You plug in your headphones. There's an on button, and you can actually listen to the music that he composed with the jewel case itself. It's the coolest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, this is fascinating because typically we take out a CD jewel case, we open it, we take the CD out, and we place the CD in our stereo. In this case, you check out the jewel case, and you plug your headphones into the jewel case itself.
Exactly. It's a lot of fun. It's really neat.
Let's give this piece a listen. So that's a little Tristan Parrish for you, and you've got to come into the library and check this thing out. Just bring your headphones and check it out and plug your headphones directly into the jewel case. You know, I walk past the library every day, and when I came in and I got my first tour of the library, I was so very impressed, and I thought, you know, as the dean, I expect to walk into the library and be able to have a warm cup of coffee served, even though it's inside the library, and sit in the periodical section and just stay abreast of all the fascinating things happen. And somehow, my dean's life didn't shake out that way, but I still walk past that enviously. And there are so many great things in that library, and the place is always abuzz. There's so many folks in there all the time and taking advantage of all of the many wonderful resources. And it's not just for music students.
No, we're so delighted when non-music students and faculty come to visit us. No matter what you're studying on campus, no matter what you're interested in, we have something for you in the music library.
And what's really exciting for me about our library is that you're immediately welcomed, and what do you need? How can we help you? We're here to make sure that your education is the best it can be, and we appreciate the good work that you've provided to us for all these years and your leadership in the music library, and thanks for coming in to chat with us about it.
Thank you.
We've been chatting about the Project Trio here at DePauw for several episodes. We had them here this week. It's been a fantastic day with them on campus. The Twitterverse is all lit up about them, and people are blogging and Facebooking about the great performance we had here last night. And here to chat with me is Tyler Huff, a sophomore neurosurgeon. No, actually, he's a neuroscience major. He's on his way to those things. So really not even a music major, which is really fantastic. Ben Blackadder, a freshman percussionist. And Henrik Olsen, freshman tenor, to join me and chat about the Project Trio. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
So you saw the concert last night?
Yeah.
Yeah? You guys see the recital hour as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
What'd you think?
It was awesome. It was insanely awesome. Yep. I was blown away.
So it was what you expected?
I've been watching stuff online, and I mean, obviously,
one of their 5 million YouTube hits.
Exactly. And I've actually tried to get everyone from my entire floor. I live on BR3. I've been trying to get everybody from my floor to go. And
well, we had a packed house. Boy, they came out for this one.
Exactly. It was cool, though. I definitely was not disappointed.
What'd you guys think?
I love the energy that they had on stage, with each other and with the audience as well. They really presented that well.
Yeah.
They were characters. Really,
they got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get here, and they acted like the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely had a lot of energy. It was really great to see. It's always great to see a group, a musical group that brings together such energy, and they have such passion in what they do. And to see that being reflected in their music and to bring that to the audience, it's such an exciting kind of concert to be in.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? Dr. Casey, our president, was sitting next to me at the concert, and he's like, why are the house lights still up? They got to turn down the house lights. I'm like, no, man, these guys keep the house lights up because they want to see the audience. They don't have any music, and it's all high-energy communication. So what was your favorite part, Ben?
I really like the raga.
The raga for Raja. Thank you. movies. How about you? What was
I definitely like Peter and the Wolf. It was really great to see a story unfold with music, because sometimes that's what music portrays to us. And
Prokofiev, not quite like you know him.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really cool. And then they brought the whole modern theme into the song, making the main character a guy in Brooklyn with some friends. And so it was really cool to see that.
That was a big hit. They played at the middle school in the afternoon, and man, the middle school kids loved that.
Yeah.
So what about you?
I like the Nutcracker.
So did you guys get some beatboxing lessons? I mean, gosh, you know, the concert ended, whatever. We were outside signing autographs for an hour and a half.
Well, the funny thing was, like, during the autograph session or whatever, I actually got a chance to talk with the flutist.
Greg.
But, he started beatboxing, and then I started beatboxing, and then had kind of a beatbox.
A beatbox off, did you? Yeah,
well, not an off, but, like, it was more collaborative, I would say.
Yeah, he was at the middle school and taught them how to do it. He said, you say, cats, something else, and barbecue, but then you leave out all the vowels and you end up being able to beatbox. It was very, very
cats
cool.
And barbecue, I mean, whatever.
So instead of cats, it was kats.
Because
when you say that with no vowels, you start beatboxing.
It's a method.
Yeah, and these guys, and you know, so they get up this morning and they head out of town. They're off to they're doing a gig with the Chicago Sinfonietta. And then to the New Jersey Symphony, and you know, just back from Germany. They're all over the place, and they certainly lit us up. So thanks for coming in to chat about it, guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depauw.edu. Our student producers are Bia Dagaford, Anna Gatdula, Adam Luman, Frederico Poppy, and Matthew Skiba. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced and recorded by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePauw University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
Dean McCoy, I have a question for you, actually. Are you the person who spilled the giant coffee stain in our music library?
It's Music for Life.